Good morning. This is a great topic this morning. It's about attunement. And when I first read through this, receiving God has always been one of those Christian things, and I never quite got it. But Kriyananda makes it, and Yogananda make it eminently clear, it's all about attunement. And so you hear that word and you think, well, now what is attunement? And I know personally, it was a question for me from, you know, the very beginning. But the reality is you're always attuned to something. And basically what we normally attune to is our own egos, because we're clear on how our minds work and who we are. And so that's our basic attunement. And so to make spiritual progress, it's imperative that we attune to something higher. I know when I first started with Ananda, I'd been meditating for years, and I was not in tune with that first group. I just could not give my heart and soul to it. And I knew that the spiritual path requires total surrender, a total giving, and I couldn't do that with this group. Nor could I find another group. I'd read their autobiography years before, and after reading it, well, I got through like 60 pages, and then I stopped, and I went back to the very first page, and I started reading it. And I took 3 or 4 months to read that book because I loved every word. And then after that, Yogananda was a friend. He was sitting right here on my shoulder, and he was my conscience. So I had an attunement with Yogananda, but SRF just never quite, I just couldn't quite be with them. I liked their meditations. There was a group in Los Gatos that I used to go to, but I just wasn't drawn to them. So I was still kind of attuned to what I liked and what I didn't like. And then my sister said one time, let's go to Ananda. I've got friends that go there. It's a place up in the hills. We'll have a good time. We'll have a class. I said, all right, let's do that. So she and I went up there for a weekend, and Asha was giving the class. And she, and my sister and I were the only two in the class. So we were shepherded around the whole weekend by Asha, and then I met David, too, that weekend. And I really felt something from these two. These two people were special. And so little by little, I began to come to Ananda Village, which is up in Nevada City, 4 hours from here. And I met some really dramatic people, Jyotishan Devi, Durgan Vidura. And I'd meet Swami, but I didn't have any feeling for Swami. But I did know these other people, and I thought, these are remarkable people. And if they believe Swami's got something going on, then clearly Swami must have something going on, because he's not going to hoodwink these people. I know better than that. So my attunement with Swami took a while. And it's a growing process. Attunement is something that you have to consciously work at. I know, just as a quick example, I learned the energization exercises, and I was doing Aikido, and I did some yoga, and I trimmed trees, and I thought, what do I need another exercise program for? It seemed silly. So that one kind of languished for a while, until I realized that if I was going to improve my attunement, I would have to do what Yogananda brought that had value. And he said, if you're on a desert island and you had one technique, you want it to be energization. He didn't say meditation, he said energization. So I changed my thinking and I started doing the energization. And now I do it every day, I promise. But what I found is that my body became stronger, much less illness. I was more in tune. And the spiritual path just begins to make a little more sense to you. Now, as far as Swami goes, I was blessed early on with an experience from Swami. I went to see him lecture in 1980 in San Francisco. And I had a remarkable experience that night. I just felt that his whole energy encompassed the room that we were in, totally surrounded it. And what he was saying was totally secondary to his giving out his attunement with Yogananda. There was an actual feeling that he put out. And it went all the way around the room because I stopped and looked and I watched the thing circle the whole room. And then 6 years later, I was fortunate enough to go on our first India trip. And toward the end of the trip, we get to go to Yogananda's house, his boyhood house, where he found God. And you're sitting in there meditating. And as soon as I sat down and started to go deep, I thought, wait a minute, I have seen this before. And I thought, now that's physically impossible. I've never been out of the country. How could I have seen this before? And so in my mind, I started to go back and back and back. And the first time I felt Yogananda's house was the first time I heard Kriyananda speak. So I thought, well, clearly, if Kriyananda is putting out Yogananda that directly, I have no problem with attunement with Kriyananda. So how do we practice this attunement? Well, we need to work at it consciously and constantly, because our default is to just go back to likes and dislikes. And what happens with those? It's all centered around the ego. What's centered around the ego takes your energy down. So when you find something that you want to attune with, what you have to do is begin to spend more time in that vibration. It's not, initially it looks like the people. Initially it looked like David and Asha. But after you're around them for a while, you realize they're human beings like everyone else. They have their quirks, their pluses and minuses. There is something deeper that we're attempting to attune to. And in this particular church, that deeper feeling is the ray that's coming through God and the gurus, through Yogananda. So, spend more time coming to church, in your meditations, your reading. The internet is full of things about Yogananda and Kriyananda. I turned on the internet last week, and there was like 20 little short sections of video that Swami had done. You got to dig a little bit, because that was over a week ago now, and it's kind of buried on the site, but it is there. And it's, how can I develop more love? And it's 7 minutes on how to develop more love. It's just fun. He's got 20 different little topics, and you can just turn them on and just pick something and feel good and grab something and then go on. Okay, so we have all sorts of possibilities for attunement. The classes, if you can sing, come and sing in the choir. That's a great one. Asha ragged on me for years. She said, sing, join the choir. And I said, all right, I'll join the choir. You know, I get up here and sing. Whether I sing well or not has almost nothing to do with it. It's attunement that I'm going for. And as we attune more and more and more, we begin to change. And we begin to identify less and less with this body and this personality. And what begins to come through us is that vibration. And so that's the blessing of attunement, is that that vibration comes through us and touches other people. And then we are channels for that ray, and we are part of that whole flow. It's the guru-disciple relationship. And it goes on and on and on. As people touch us, we touch others, and you touch other people and share that ray. Okay, so consciously work at your attunement. Think about it. Pray about it. I got Dambara posted Asha's latest letter this morning, right? Sometime. And she said further down in that letter that even meditation is a form of attunement. And as you meditate, you are attuning to that feeling of God. So as you sit quietly and just feel that energy, that's your attunement with God. I just love that thought. And the last thing I'd like to leave you with on this reading is devotion. Okay? Work with your devotion. I know personally devotion was a hard one for me. It's just like, how can you possibly be devoted? So that was another one I had to sit and work with. And I thought, well, everyone loves. You love something. You love your dog or your cat or your wife or something. And so I took that love and distilled it down to the feeling of love. And then as I could feel the love, that was my devotion. I could be devoted to God as love. because that was just pure, perfect, and clear. So whatever it takes to get your devotion going, work with that too, because in this reading it says, if you can raise your consciousness through devotion to that place where God exists, and God exists as a feeling, and that feeling is pure love, and we, our work, is to raise to that point. And then God can come and change us. God changes us. We put out 25% of the effort. Yogananda puts out 25% of the effort. God puts out 50% of the effort. But we have to raise our consciousness to that place. Okay, that's probably plenty to keep you busy. God bless.
A short while ago, we listened to Swami Kriyananda's words on work, and we affirmed together, I will do my work thinking of Thee, Lord. I offer to Thee the very best that is in me. Wouldn't it be lovely if that were the case all the time? We wouldn't need 10,000 laws and governments to enforce them. People would naturally do unto others as they would have others do unto them, because in offering to God the very best that is in us, it becomes our nature to serve our neighbors in that same spirit. This, of course, is the premise that underlies the concept of community. It's people working together. Cooperation takes the place of what we see today elsewhere instead, which is competition for personal gain and the strife, greed, and all of the other problems that that competition brings about. Yogananda's vision of small brotherhood communities as a model for cooperative living is truly a God-given concept. And it is to this vision that Swami Kriyananda has dedicated his life's work, the very best that is in him. For those of us who live in one of the eight Ananda communities, it is just truly a blessing. His attunement and guidance to God and Guru just filters down to each of us and invites us, inspires us to serve one another in that spirit. If you haven't explored the opportunity to live in real community, and you'd like to know more about it, I invite you to talk with my friend Rick here. He and Barbara Feasterman manage the Ananda Palo Alto community, and I know that they would be very glad to give you a tour as well. We're just a couple of miles down the road. Well, back to work. Work in the right spirit, from the messiest and meanest of chores to steering the course of the nation, is to me a supremely noble occupation. And when done thinking of the Lord, it nourishes the soul with joy and satisfaction, whether or not the end result that was aimed at is actually achieved. It's just it's a wonderful feeling. But of course, we all love to complain when work becomes a drudge, don't we? When it just isn't fun anymore. No need for a show of hands, but is there anyone here who's ever tried to get out of work? Maybe cut a corner or two? There are countless stories, humorous stories, that characterize an attitude towards work that is less than enthusiastic, and we laugh at them. I suspect because there is a part of us that wishes someone else would do what we don't want to. Mark Twain once remarked, "Oh, I love work. I can sit and watch it for hours." Edgar Bergen, the famous ventriloquist, had another one of my favorite lines that was spoken through his alter ego, Charlie McCarthy. People of my generation will remember Charlie as a wisecracking little aristocrat in top hat and tuxedo. He even wore a monocle. And at one time, Bergen tried to motivate him, saying, "Charlie, a little work never killed anyone." To which Charlie replied, "Yeah, but why take a chance?" Here in Silicon Valley, working long hours is frequently the norm. Folks in high tech and elsewhere often make sizable salaries, and many have surrounded themselves with lots of expensive toys and the latest material comforts. Yet, it seems, especially these days, that you seldom hear people talk about how much they enjoy their work or where they happen to be doing their work. It's really a shame. For many young workers especially, there's more talk about sacrificing their freedom now in the hope of retiring early, maybe even hitting it big and walking away from work altogether by the age of 40. You've heard the expression, "Be careful what you wish for." I wonder sometimes if these folks really know what it is that they're wishing for, because retirement for its own sake, for the sake of simply taking it easy, is really a guarantee of a soon-to-be empty life. Without a diet of constructive goals and activities, even the pursuit of fun becomes futile and unfulfilling. We read each week from this little book, Affirmations for Self-Healing. If you don't own a copy, I encourage you to invest a few dollars and take one home. Every one of the 52 qualities in that little book is an avenue to wellness inside and out. And I believe that work is one of the most important of those qualities. Truly, when we are doing good work, it drives away our pettiness, our moodiness, our worries. Worry. Now, there's a big one, especially these days, in these times of sinking investments, rising unemployment, and almost waiting for another shoe to drop. I wonder sometimes, you know, could it be me? Certainly could it be our friends? There are members of my family who are dealing with that right now. Maybe you've lost your job, your savings. But where is your energy going when worry is your prevalent state of mind? Worry is a form of paralysis, and work is one of the best ways to overcome it. If you don't have a job to go to, invent a new one. Become a volunteer. in serving others, we raise our consciousness and we deal with that negative vibration, redirecting it into a channel of productivity that is just bound to magnetize good things happening. Thomas Jefferson was once asked if he believed in luck. He replied, yes, he did. And the questioner asked him, why? Jefferson said simply, I study the law that luck obeys. The more good work I do, the more good luck I have. Now, let's face it, there are karmic restraints that enter the picture, too. You may not get everything you work for in this life. In fact, you can be certain that you won't. And our teachings also admonish us not to become attached to the fruits of our labors. This isn't to deprive us of enjoyment. It's to show us where our true enjoyment lies, in mastering the art of self-offering. How do we get ourselves, our little selves, out of the way to accomplish that? Given our social conditioning, I grant you it is not an easy proposition. And yet, if we practice just doing it, the more we practice, the better we become at it, until practice makes perfect. I will do my work thinking of thee, Lord. I offer to thee the best that is in me. Are you apt to lose your focus at times and slip into egocentric states of mind, into worry, into envy, into wishing that you were someone or somewhere else? Well, there's no doubt about it. But Yogananda has assured us that our destiny is in communion with the divine. And Swami Kriyananda has encouraged us to strive for that highest potential for ourselves in this lifetime. And if he didn't believe we could do it, he wouldn't have put that out there for us to strive for. I will do my work thinking of thee, Lord. I offer to thee the best that is in me. Affirm it. Put your willingness and your energy into it and see if it doesn't serve you, as the song says, with a freedom no riches can give. God bless.